Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de Lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
This is a kind of teaching time that we have at our church that really is built on the weeks before. So if you do miss a Sunday, it would be helpful for you and just to stay connected to maybe watch or listen and, just even get some notes and just say, oh, kind of, I know what we're building up to. And we're on this series, like Joanna mentioned, about what it means to pay attention to the things we anchor our lives on. The things that we really decide we're going to build our life and our beliefs and our hope on. And we often realize this in times of crisis. We wonder about what that means. We wonder about what our lives are really built on when we have to teach it to our kids. And they disagree with us. And we're like, well, that's what you're going to do because that's what we've decided. Or when there's a crisis and you're like, what do I really believe? Like, I thought this about God or I thought this about life, but it's not happening. You know, this week is a very significant week for us who live in Quebec. If you're listening from somewhere else in Canada or the world, here in this province, this week marks the two-year anniversary of a horrible, horrible tragedy that happened in the mosque in Quebec City. And for that reason, this week, many Muslim leaders and other religious leaders in the province have called this week Islam Awareness Week. And they've decided that they want to create a space where they can help people understand what the Muslim faith is about. And let me just say one thing, that as a church, if you're new to church or you're listening from somewhere else, we are so committed to being the kind of church that listens well to people that we even disagree with, to people that we have a different perspective on, that we're able to say, you know what, we have a different view of God from you, but it's okay. We don't have to like argue or fight, because it's in the Bible that Jesus teaches us not only to get along with people we like, but to learn how to pray and love even our enemies or even people we disagree with. Now, I'm not good at that. I don't know if you are. I'm not someone like, yeah, I can't wait to hug people I disagree with. Like, I know people in church who just don't even sit in the same area of church because they don't like someone. Like, imagine how hard it is to be people who say, you know what, there's going to be times where we disagree with a lot of people. But we're going to be the kind of church and we're going to be the kind of leaders that model listening well, respecting well, having compassion and caring. And so this week I'm really aware of how important this is for our province and for us as a church to be open to our kids or our grandchildren, a friend saying, hey, I went to this course in university, I was paying attention to this learning about faith thing that's going on. So I want you to be very aware of that. That it's something we're going to have to continue to learn as we grow and as our world gets complicated and as we interact with other religious communities. Now, you might not know this, but the series that we're in is really a series about when Christianity was the religion that needed a Christian Awareness Week. There was a time where nobody knew what Christianity was. Christianity didn't need a Christian Awareness Week. It needed a Christian Awareness Year. It actually took about 2 years for Christians to start to piece together, how do we speak about who we are to other people? How do we tell people who want to kill us, people who want to hurt us, at the time an empire called the Roman Empire, how do we tell them that we're legit? How do we tell them that we're like really friendly? How do we tell them like we're about love? Jesus was about love. How do we tell them that? Because Christians, when Christianity started, were like, we don't know if we have the right language to convey to a world what it means that we love a God who loves people and who cares about the world. We don't know how to do that in a way that it's always going to make sense. And so Christians had to really, really learn how to talk about this. And this is why they had to learn how to talk about this. I mentioned this last week. Is because Christianity started to grow. When a religion is very small and it's just 4 or 5 people who want to start like kind of a spiritual group about like Oprah's book club, whatever you want, right? It's kind of contained. It's something you just do with each other. But as a faith begins to grow, like Christianity does, Christianity basically exists for 700 years before a religion like Islam will even develop. So they're really, they're kind of learning, how do we tell people this is what it means to be a Christian? And so what we've decided over the next few weeks together is we're going to take you through kind of a journey of learning and maybe reminding yourself in a fresh way what it means when you say, I am a Christian. Now, I said this last week, I'll say it again. For some of you in this series, you're going to realize for the very first time that you are not a Christian. You're going to realize that you and your kids maybe learned about God somewhere, you went to another church, you learned all these things, and you realize, wow, like I think I know some things about Christianity, but I don't think I'm really a Christian. And that's a good thing. Because you get a chance to affirm in a new way and say, if that's what it means to be a Christian, I have some questions. And we're really part of the kind of way we want to create a church is that where people can ask questions. So one of the things we've done as you walked in this morning is you got a bookmark. Everybody get a bookmark? You should get one. If you don't have one, you can get one on your way out, or our host team will give you one. And on this bookmark, we thought we'd print for you some of the most ancient ways that Christians have talked about what it means to love Jesus and to follow Jesus. And we gave it to you on a bookmark for two reasons. One is there's two different versions of what's called the creed that I'll explain in a second. And I don't know about you, like on my house, on my fridge, there's all kinds of nonsense posted on my fridge, right? My son painted something. It's nice, but we could throw it in the garbage now. But we have all kinds of things. It's okay. You can do that too. But I'm just saying, there's a lot of things. Like there's a popsicle holding something. I was like, I love that. I'm like, throw this in the garbage. What is this nonsense? So I said to my wife, we need to have something sometimes that we look at and we're like, hey, let's put this on the fridge for a little while. And you might want to take this bookmark and put it somewhere, maybe in a book, but maybe somewhere where you can see it and read it regularly as a reminder of like, this is how Christians have talked about what it means to follow Jesus for thousands of years. And one of the things I'm trying to do, and I when I remember, if I'm home, I do this, I try to read it with my oldest son before he goes to bed. And I'll read him the creed, and I'll go through some of these steps, and you'll see in a little while why this is so important. Now, he understands some of it, and some of it's like that, I don't think I understand that part. And I'm like, it's okay. But it's for you. It's for you to have. And on one side of the bookmark, we also put some dates. So you could see which part we're going to be learning on every week that's coming up. The reason we did that is we know that for some of you, you know people who don't believe in God at all. You know people who don't know anything about Christianity. You know people that you care about and they have questions and you're like, that's a great question. I don't know really the answer to that. You can look at the bookmark and say, on this Sunday at our church, we're learning about this and maybe you'd love to come because it might help you answer some of the questions you had, right? It's a tool for you to have and to think about. So it doesn't have to be awkward. It doesn't have to be weird. But it's just something that you would have and you would keep. So we encourage you to use that. But one of the reasons that Christians wanted to talk about Jesus in a very clear way was that God in the Bible revealed himself as a God who keeps his promises. Do you know anybody who doesn't keep his promise, their promises? Do you know somebody who says something and a week later it's like, oh, I forgot, I'm not doing that anymore. And you're like, you're just trying to figure out like, you know very quickly, it's part of human nature, to be like, in your mind, you make a mental note to say like, you can't trust that person, right? You know that? The young guy, yeah, I know somebody. You know, you realize, can I really trust this person? And in the Bible, one of the things that we learn very early about Christianity and how people are talking about God is Jesus will often tell people, you know God the Father? You can trust him. You can trust that what he says he's going to do, you can trust that what he says he's going to give you and how he's going to be available to you in your life, you can trust that. And I know for some of you, you don't believe that. You're like, I don't believe that. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's never happened because one time I prayed and it didn't happen. Or I thought God was going to help me with this and it didn't work out. And yet constantly we're invited to return to the place where we would ask ourselves, do you really believe that you can anchor your life on the promises of who God is? And it's very hard to just say, yes, I believe that, but it takes time to think about, what am I really saying when I say yes to that question? And so this week I wanted to just begin by reading you a promise that's in the Bible, in the last book of the Bible. And it's a promise that Jesus makes to us and to people who follow him. And you'll see it on the screen behind me, and it says this. Jesus is talking to people at the end of time, and he says this. Behold, I am making all things new. That's one of the great promises of Jesus to us. Not that he's making all things in the world new, but that he's making all things new. That means he's making you new, and he's making me new, and he's correcting and fixing and healing and restoring all of the broken things that we see around us. Jesus is making all things new. What area in your life do you need Jesus to make new? What things have you been caring or thinking about, worried about, regretting over, wishing they'd go away, wishing secrets, wishing for that, hoping it gets fixed, blaming someone else, all that you would say this morning before you leave, if you could say one thing to Jesus, you would say, would you make this part of my life new again? Would you heal this area of my life that I remember when I went through this bitter divorce, or when I had this relationship that fell apart, or when I had a situation where I was unwise with my money and now I feel like the weight of debt is crushing me, or this broken relationship with my kids, would you make that new, Jesus? Because the Bible tells us that we can anchor our lives not only on some doctrines that we read, but in a God who says, I'm the God who keeps his promises. And I'm the God that in keeping my promises will show you what it's like when I start to make broken things whole again. When I start to take things that seem destroyed and bring them new life. When I take people who feel like they're in bondage and they feel like they're trapped and I set them free. Because I'm the God who's making all things new. Now in Christianity, one of these promises, although people would talk about it, a lot of people wouldn't believe it. Because there's other religions and other beliefs and people are like, that's ridiculous. And so early on in the faith, in the Christian faith, as the Bible was coming together and as the scriptures were coming together, the earliest Christians had to learn, as they talked to people, to say to them, hey, I believe in Jesus. Do you believe in Jesus? Like, are you a Christian? Because I'm a Christian. Like, they started to think about this. And I said this last week. I'm always kind of shocked that people forget this. But remember that people in the Bible don't have a Bible. Can I say that again? People in the Bible don't have a Bible. They have the Hebrew story of Israel. They have some books that we read, but they don't have all of the books that we have today that we could just read when we want. And you could ask Siri, hey Siri, read the Gospel of Luke for me while I'm driving in traffic. You're welcome, whatever accent you have. Put whoever you want, right? Like we're so advantageous in the fact we have all of this. And even that, I know people who never read the Bible ever. But the earliest Christians, as they're trying to make sense of their faith and they're trying to tell others, you know, like God healed my marriage and he can heal your marriage. And they're like, really? They're like, yeah. Let me tell you who this God is. They would start to tell people about who Jesus is. Because it's very important to understand that anybody who experiences the healing and the freedom that Jesus gives them, to know whether it's really from Jesus is you want other people to have it. If you experience some kind of blessing that you just want for yourself, it's probably not from God. It's just for yourself. It's a selfish way that we understand blessing in our culture. Like, I hope I get a better job, but I hope you don't. I hope I get a better thing. I hope my kids do better, but I don't really care about yours. In Christianity, when God blesses people, he blesses them and awakens in them this love and compassion for other people to have the same blessing in their life. And so as Christians felt God healing their homes and healing their marriages and fixing situations that were broken and God was making things new, they're like, how do I tell my neighbor this? How do I tell my daughter this? How do I tell the people? And they're like, we don't really have a Bible to share. How do we tell them the beautiful story that we've anchored our lives on? How do we tell them? And this creed becomes one of the ways that they do this, that they talk about this. And as they're doing this, guess what happens? Christianity becomes so misunderstood. That there's a whole movement that emerges where people are like, Christians, we've heard about them. We should kill them. Like, they're annoying, they don't follow the laws of the empire, they don't do what we told them to do. So you might not know this, but one of the earliest titles that we know that people used for the followers of Jesus in history was that they were called atheists. Christians were called atheists as one of the early titles for being demeaned in a culture. Now, take 30 seconds and think about this. Can you guess why they would be called atheists? You have to tell anyone, you know, put your hand up, there's no quiz. But one of the reasons they're called atheists is because their God is invisible. And there's no temple of him. There's no pictures of him. And in an ancient world, when you believed in a God, you went to the temple and you worshipped and you sacrificed to say, oh yeah, we believe the God of Israel, Yahweh, whose son is Jesus. We believe in him. And they're like, oh cool, where do we go to see him? They're like, about that, there is no place for you to go and see him. Oh, you're the atheists. You're the ones who are ruining the empire. We gotta kill your kind. So Christians are like, hey, Christianity Awareness Month. Okay, guys, make some posters. Do some stuff. They're trying to figure out how do we tell people that we don't want to die. So one of the things that they start to do is they start to think about, how would I explain this faith to someone who doesn't believe? Have you ever thought about that? How do I share with someone that I love God, that I love Jesus, that I go to church in a weird warehouse? How do I share that with them if they don't believe? And they're like, really? Like, you believe that? So one of the things Christians did is they started to use art. Art is one of the great, you know, gifts that we have, because art can be interpreted in different ways. And one of the earliest symbols we have that we know of that people are using in tombstones and cemeteries in the ancient world who are Christians is they often will use a fish. Maybe some of you know why. Jesus was a fisherman, fish, connecting. He's fishing for men. You get that? Some of you are already falling asleep. Okay, so another group of people, they used an anchor. An anchor became an early symbol that Christians used. Now, it might be weird to you because you're like, why wouldn't they just use the cross? Early Christians tried whenever they could not to use the cross as a symbol of talking about Jesus. Because in the ancient world, the cross was a symbol of mass execution. It's like you going today and seeing somebody walking around with a necklace, right, with an electric chair on their necklace. You'd be like, oh, that's awesome. I would love to be part of that. How does that work, guys? Can we sign up? Will you sign up here? Yeah, go on our website. You sign up. We do a potluck. Everybody be like, what the heck is this? It's the same idea. Christians know this. They're like, we know that the Bible talks about Jesus being the one who dies on the cross, but we can't use that language all the time. It's going to get us in trouble. So what do we use? Well, let's think of other images and symbols that we can use to emphasize that our lives are anchored on Jesus. Let's do that. You know, we're living in a time when we're going to have to rethink this again. We're going to have to think of new ways to talk about that we love Jesus and our lives are anchored in who he is and what he came to do. And a lot of people are like, no, we're being punished. I can't put up a Christmas tree, whatever. It's nonsense, by the way. Like, the kind of persecution that we know Christians have faced in the past and now around the world is, like, mind-blowing still in the 21st century. And yet we see from the beginning that Christians are trying to say, hey, I want you to experience the hope and the joy that I've experienced. And let me tell you a little about who this Jesus is. Now, the earliest Christians, you know, they used this anchor and this image of this anchor, but they also came together and decided we need, like, a creed, a framework. And if you were here last week, you can go to the slide, it just says creed. Is I talked about what the word creed means. Just to make it easy, it's not the movie Creed. It's kind of a Latin word that means I believe. It means I believe these things. And it's not just I believe these things because they're a good idea. It's I believe these things in such a way that I'm building my life on this truth. That's what it means. Like I said, it's very easy to believe things that you kind of like, yeah, I believe them if I have time. Like, I believe them if it's a nice day and it's not snowing. I believe, like, we believe differently. But when we say I believe, and when Christians started to say I believe, they were saying I believe in such a way where the decisions I make in my life are going to be reflective of these beliefs. And they started to use this creed. Now, in your bookmark, you'll see the whole creed. You'll see the whole sections of it. The one with the dates on it is often called the Apostles' Creed. It's the simplest, most tight, it's the cleanest version of it. And on the other side, I'll mention in a second, it's a bigger, kind of more robust version. There's words you might not understand, and I'll explain them a little bit. But all of us at some point in our lives decide what we're going to build our lives on. All of us. Because what we build our lives on sets the trajectory for the kind of people we're going to become. That's what it does. Where we stand sets the place that we're going to jump to. Where we build our trust and our values will set the direction our life goes. If you have kids, you know how crucial this is. And you're constantly trying to help your kids remember this. Like, if you take this step, it might not put you in a position that you might want to be in the future. We do this automatically. And in the faith and in understanding religion in general, all religions have this framework. They encourage people to reflect on, hey, what are you building your life on? What are you making a commitment to? What are the things really worth dying for? The most painful experience you will ever experience in your life is realizing at some point that you died for something that never mattered. That you gave your life to something that never mattered. That you told your kids and you placed values on them and you told them to commit to this and to that and to this, and they've worked their whole lives and they get to the top and they're like, none of this matters. If you don't believe me, just read stories of people who've written about, like, their whole lives committed to being a leader, a CEO, a business person of influence, and they get to the top and they're like, this is it? Like, I lost everything for this? The most painful experience in all of our lives is to never have stopped to reflect on whether you're building your life on something that will really matter in the end. And everything around us is telling us, oh, this matters and this matters and this matters. And at some point, Jesus tells his followers, these are the things that are going to outlast everything. So build your life on these truths. And today I want to talk to you about the second part of the creed, which is the second verse, and you'll see it on behind me on the slide. You can go to the bookmark image. Last week we looked at the first one, that we believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator or maker of heaven and earth. And I talked about that. And if you missed it, you can go watch it. And I talked about how important it was that Christians talked about God as a father, what it meant for them, that they had a father who loved them. And they talked about this all the time. And today I want to talk about the second part of the creed, that we believe in Jesus Christ, his only son, our Lord. For us men and women, and for our salvation, he came down from heaven. Now, on your creed, to this Sunday and next Sunday are kind of connected. So my prayer is, if you can, because you have a whole week to cancel whatever you were doing next Sunday, is to be here again next Sunday. Okay? Because they're kind of, you're going to feel them, that they're connected. because they talk about who Jesus is. But how many of you have ever heard the saying, I didn't believe it till I got older, but the saying that says, most people don't appreciate something that they don't work for. Anybody believe that? Anyone have kids? It's like almost instinctual that you're like, yeah, I did this thing and my kids just took advantage of it. It's kind of like a human nature that many of us believe, like most of us know that if we don't really work for something, we usually don't really appreciate it the way we should. And as parents, at least in my context, I'm usually yelling at my kids and telling them of how hard I worked for the thing they just threw in the garbage. Huh? Any parents who have kids who have the disease of drinking half a juice box? That disease? Okay, I do. Okay? You can have my kids. But it's like, do you know how hard daddy worked? This half a juice box, and if you're like me, you think of a way of saving it. I put it in a thing, a container, and you start to save. Or if you're really like, you're like, I don't want to drink 1,700 grams of sugar, but I'm not throwing it, and I drink it. Anyone? Yes. We're human here. We're human. You're like, we're not throwing this out. You know how hard I work for this? You drink it all. Now, the reason I tell you this is for the next 10 minutes that I'm sharing, all of you will start to feel the weight of what it's like that you probably don't appreciate something that you didn't work for. That you probably will not appreciate what we didn't work for together for the fact of this next part of the creed that Christians worked so hard to articulate. They worked so hard to talk and explain and dialogue and understand the words that they would use to talk about Jesus who came as the Son of God for our salvation. We almost like take it for granted. You're like, of course, there's a song about that. I have Jesus in my heart and soul as personal savior. Whatever. It's like, it's just, it rolls off our tongue. All of us are prone to not appreciate the work that happened to bring this part of the creed together for us. And so I want to take a few minutes and kind of explain this to you. And I want to explain it to you for one important reason, that when I learned this, I was so upset at the church that I grew up in. I remember the day that I learned part of this, and I'm like, how come I never learned this before? How come nobody told me this? And I'm like, I went to church my whole life, and I did catechism, and like I was an altar boy, and I did all these things. And I'm like, and then I started to learn this. I'm like, I want my money back. Like, where do we go? Like, I want something back. I didn't learn any of this. And I thought, we need to create spaces in our church where we together, the next generation, are kind of learning. They're feeling a bit of the weight of like, well, what we believe is not just made up stuff in the sky that crazy people are like, oh, religion is for people who are weak. People say that know nothing about religion, by the way. Because the faith of any religious tradition has taken years and just hard work and dialogue and conflict to see it come together. And so this part of the creed, it comes from this beautiful passage in the Bible that most of the time we only hear at Christmas time. And so it gets lost for another year, and then a year goes by, and then I read it again. So I want to read it for you now again. And it's a passage in the Gospel of John where we're told something about Jesus that nobody really was ready to hear. This is what it says. You'll see it behind me on the screen. It says, in the beginning was the Word, who is Jesus, by the way. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known. Now, you might read this and be like, that was hard to understand. What the heck is going on? And that's normal. But this is one of the first times that we feel in the Bible something that starts to happen that creates a very unique conflict with people in the Bible. This is one of the first times that we feel Christians are learning to say that Jesus didn't just come from heaven as a good teacher. Jesus didn't just come to teach us how to be free and successful. Jesus didn't just come so that we would have a movie called The Passion. Jesus didn't just come for these things. Jesus came and he was God. People are like, really? That's what you believe? That's ridiculous. Who believes that? Like a human was God. And if you don't think that's ridiculous, something's wrong with you. That is so ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world that somehow God had a son. How does that even work? Like, who's his wife? Like, when did they have this son? And if you don't feel that that's rubbing you the wrong way and feels ridiculous, it's because you've been a Christian for too long. You've kind of just been in church and you're like, yeah, that's what people believe. That's the truth. No, no. Anybody who heard that would have thought, say that again. You're saying, okay, God has a son and he came on earth and that's God. That's what you're saying? You're crazy. That's what it is. That's what you are. Everybody in the early times when Christians, remember, they're doing their year awareness, Christianity awareness training, and they hear that, They're like, what are you talking about? So you can imagine how hard it would be for Christians in the ancient world and still today to keep talking about the truth of what this means. That Jesus, who's there from the beginning, is there, baby Jesus in the manger, happy birthday, baby Jesus, from the beginning is with God, and he's part of the creation story. So, I'm going to tell you, for the next few minutes so you don't fall asleep, about two major fights that Christians have, okay? Now, I know none of you know any churches that fight, and I know you've never heard of a church split, and I know that, but they happen, okay? So, two major conflicts that Christians will feel that all of us are prone not to appreciate because we didn't fight them. Ready? First, earliest followers of Jesus and Jewish people. The earliest Christians are going to have such a hard time getting along with Jewish people. Now today, we're like, we're going to Israel, we're going to see the Holy Land, all that stuff. That's great. It's fine. But that's not really happening when Christianity starts. The Jewish people are like, these Christians think that Jesus and God the Father that we believe in, that they're the same person. Can you believe that? You know what they are? They're crazy. And so early on, if you learn about the Bible and if you read the Bible, you will often miss the tensions that are starting to develop between Christians, followers of Jesus, and the Jewish faith at the time. Because it's like, this is not going to work, guys. We're not going to get along. We're going to have a real battle on our hands if this doesn't get cleared up. And so Christians are trying to learn to say, hey, we're loving and caring, but we don't know any other way to say it. Jesus was the Son of God. That's what he was. He didn't just come to point us to God. He didn't just come to give us some tips for life. He actually gives us a picture of what God is like. You know what that means for us? That's good news. Jesus gives us a picture of a Father that's slow to anger, that's overflowing in mercy, that loves to forgive people, that pays attention when we pray, that cares about us when everything around us is broken. Jesus is like, that's what the Father's like. And the more you learn about the Father, Jesus says, the Father wants to fill your life with the promises of this kind of life. That you would be a person that would learn to forgive others. That you would be a person that would be slow to anger. That you would be a person that's merciful and compassionate. Don't you want that? Now, if you don't want that, you're going to hate all of this. But the assumption is that people who met Jesus are like, we don't want to live in lives of bondage anymore. We want to live that kind of life. And Jesus is like, it's available to you if you anchor your life on the things I've taught you. And if you anchor your life on the truth of who I am, that's what starts to happen. Now, I told you there's two fights. The first one is easy. The first one is with who? The Jewish people. It's fairly easy. It's kind of like they're fighting. They're like, the next one is more complicated. And the next one is more complicated because to tell you it, I have to tell you just a little bit of history. Okay? Now, I know some of you, you're like, you hear the word history and your body automatically falls asleep. You're like, oh my gosh, wake me up when Dom stops talking. But if you don't know a little bit of this, it's going to be very hard, again, to appreciate something you never worked for. It's going to be really hard for you to really appreciate, like, wow, Christians went through what? To kind of make sure that we would have the Bible and this creed available thousands of years later? They did what? Just like when you find out, like, a grandparent or grandmother trekked through who knows where to get here so that we would have a home. We know the feeling of, like, you did what for us? You start to feel this new appreciation. So my prayer is that the next 5 minutes, when I'm sharing a bit of this history stuff, that your heart would not get tired, but you would say, God, give me a deeper heart of appreciation for some of these important things that I should understand about my faith. So Christians, one of the first things that happens to them is around the year 300 or so, make it easy, I don't want it too complicated, right? There's a leader in Rome who's the most important leader in the world, and he's an emperor, okay? And his name, some of you maybe heard of the story, you watched the documentary, or you maybe did a history class. His name was Constantine, okay? How many of you ever heard that name before? Some of you heard it, some of you named your kids that, some of you know somebody, oh, it's a kid in my class, his name is Constantino. Okay, it comes from him. It comes from this guy. Okay, Constantine, it's beautiful, hug him. Hey, you're named after an emperor, I know. No, whatever. Parents tell their kids all these stories. Okay, so this emperor Constantine does something that nobody expects him to do. He does something which still, to this day, is one of the most confusing things in all of history, not only Christian history, all of history, is that he decides that he too wants to become a Christian. And Christians are like, is he tricking us? he's like the emperor. Like, is it because he wants to kill us? Like, we don't know if it's legit. Like, do we believe him? So I'm just curious. How many of you, be honest, if you heard that, like, the, one of the greatest rulers of all time says, I want to be a Christian, I'm coming to your church, how many of you would be like, I believe him right away? All of you. This is so suspicious. Look at you, corrupt. No, you'd be like, well, maybe it's true. Like, we don't know what's going on in his heart. We don't know what God's doing. But how many, for most of us, I'm included, would be like, get out of here. Get the heck out of here. The guy's going to burn the whole place down. Never, never. So Christians are stuck in this moment. You can go to the picture of Constantine. I have a nice picture of him. We actually have a kind of sense of him. And Constantine does this maneuver thing where he says yes to Christianity because he believes God, the Christian God, whatever he knows about him, helped him win a battle. He wins a battle like people today. You know, they pray about something. If it happens, they're like, I'll believe if I get rich. Something like that. So it happened, and he's like, I guess I got to keep my side of the deal. How do I become a Christian? So he starts to tell Christians, who at this time have been around for 300 years, that he wants in. And not only that he wants to be a Christian, that he wants to start to help them. And you're like, wow, okay. We have an emperor who wants to be a Christian. I don't know. Like, I'd be like, is he going to help us pay the rent? Yeah, he said yes. Okay, that's good. Is he going to make sure that the snow is taken out of the building every week so when people can come to church? Oh, yeah, he's going to do all that. You know what he also said he's going to do? He's going to help us build new churches. You're like, really? We're writing all these things down. How many of you start to feel like, guys, I think we should believe the guy? Sounds legit. How many of you? Very quickly, I'd be like, guys, sounds legit. Let's go with this guy. He starts to do this, and in some strange way, there's times that this emperor acts like a Christian, and other times where he acts like worse than like the devil. And Christians are like stuck. But Constantine is about to get a surprise that he never expected. You ready? All of you awake still? You feeling it? The history piece? Remember, you'll appreciate when you feel the weight of it. You know what Constantine never expected? The funniest thing, that Christians never get along. He is the most powerful emperor in the known world. You know what he can't fix? A church fight. He cannot. He hears, once he says yes to Christianity, that there's a brewing fight between churches because they disagree about who Jesus really is. Can you imagine how angry you would be if you have all the power in the world and you can't make Christians get along? I know a bit of that feeling. No, I'm kidding. Can you get along? Just hug. Be friends. It's a verse in the Bible. Like, this emperor is like, you're telling me that there's churches that are arguing and fighting because you guys don't get along? And they're like, yeah, we kind of forgot to tell you. So he's like, when I'm giving you money, like, where does it go? He's like, well, we're kind of fighting because they believe this about God and we believe this about God. And this whole fight happens. And so Constantine comes up with an idea. It's a pretty clever idea. He's like, I don't know any of this. This sounds like all crazy, but I have a deal I'm going to make with you guys. How about I create a space, I rent a place for you guys, like my palace, I get you some food, I get all you leaders here, and then I let you figure out what you really believe about Christianity. How does that sound? They're like, it's pretty legit. Now, some people are like, are you sure? What if this is an ambush? All of us leaders go. And so what's picked is a location that is in modern-day Turkey called Nicaea. You can go to the map. You'll see it. Over there. That's the location. Now, some of you, maybe pieces are all connecting in your head because on the back of your bookmark, it says the Nicene Creed. That's the place and the time where Christians were almost forced because this emperor is like, this is ridiculous. Like, you're going to figure all that. To iron out in a very painful way how they would speak about who Jesus really was. And the debate is always about, do we really believe that Jesus was God? Now, let me ask you a very simple question, okay? If I asked you to think about a word that's a word that means super, super close, what word comes to mind? Like, super close. I bet you can think of a ceremony that represents people being super close. What's a ceremony in our culture that we use? Huh? Marriage, right? It's one of the most beautiful things we have that words can't really capture to say, whatever they're doing there, they're about to get really close. You know what I'm saying? Some of you are like, what? Did Dom say sex? Did Dom say the word sex? How did I miss that? Was there a picture? What did I miss? Anyway, so just woke up. Relax. It's weird. So the word intimacy is a word. The word to be sexual is a word. The word to be super close, to be in love. These are all words that we use. They make sense. But Christians felt that there wasn't a word that they had that captured how close it was that Jesus and the Father were the same. They had no word. They had words that meant close, but they needed a better word. And so they use a word that's in your creed that none of us ever use today. And the word is begotten of the Father. The word begotten that you hear at Christmas if you sing means that God and the Father are so close that the Son is begotten of the Father, meaning he's not created like a human, but he's of the same nature as the Father. Now, you know why that's so weird for us? Because nobody uses the word begotten. And if you do, people will be like, what the heck does that mean? Right? We don't even have a word in English to talk about this. And even in the Bible times, like the word begotten is hard to find the meaning of it. But in the creed, it'll become the word that's used that means this. I believe and we believe that Jesus and the Father are the same. Both of them are God together. We believe that. And a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, if we believe that, that's so hard to tell people and explain. It almost sounds crazy. And they're like, I know. Because part of the creed is to help us talk about a mystery. The same way a marriage is meant to explain to you a mystery of what it means that two people love each other. Even sometimes people that you see and you don't think they should be together. You ever been to a wedding like that? People next to you, I can't believe they're together. Look how different. Oh my goodness, I can't. And I'm like, would you shut up? You don't know what's going on in their heart. None of you here do that, but I'm just saying. Some people I know, maybe here, do that. But it's just, we get upset when we don't feel like we see how the connection works. I don't see it. You see it? Shut up! I'm kidding. Okay, so the word begotten is the most heavy word for what it means that Jesus and the Father, they're the same. And it's so important to hold that together and to believe it. And one person who's very, very important that you've never heard of probably, his name is Athanasius. Just say it with me, okay? Athanasius. Everyone say Athanasius. Athanasius. He lives in a place called Alexandria. So his name is Athanasius of Alexandria. It's a person you've never heard of. And when you go to heaven one day, you're going to meet him. And he's going to say to you, did your pastor tell you about me? And you're going to be like, you better believe it. And he's going to say, what did he tell you about me? And you're going to tell Athanasius this. You go to the slide. That Jesus became what we are that we might become what he is. That's what you tell Athanasius. You tell him that because of what you did at that council, we, thousands of years later, still understood what it meant to say that we believe. That's what we did. Because this is what it means that Jesus and the Father, because Jesus comes not only to say, like, I'm with the Father and we're friends and I hope you're a good person. No. That I have come to make it possible for you to become children of God the way I am the Son of God. That's what I've come to do. And those who say, yes, I believe and are anchored in that truth, embrace this reality. Now, forever we will work at trying to explain this mystery. How does that work? We'll be like, hey, I know a word, it's called begotten, and it means like really, really close, but super close, even more than close. You could try. It might not always work. And years from now, we might have a better way of explaining that. But Athanasius is like, you have to get this right. You have to embrace that a life that is anchored on the truth of who Jesus is makes us a promise. It makes us a promise that Jesus does to us what the Father was doing through him. That Jesus heals in us all of the weight and sin that he carried gets healed in us because of him. And Athanasius, as he's part of this gathering, he actually is called the great father of Christian orthodoxy, if you want to know and you care about theology. But Athanasius is this great champion of saying, we can't keep having this debate and fighting. And we don't have time to keep telling you about the fight. But when that council meeting in 324 Nicaea is done, Christians will say, this creed, the Nicene Creed, which has the word begotten in it, will become the way we articulate together that Jesus is God. That's who he is. He's not just an idea, not just a friendly person. He and the Father are one. And I want to end by telling you why this is so important. Because at the end of his life, before he dies, and I'm going to close with this, Jesus prays for us. He prays for all the people who are going to believe in him. And this is what he says. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. He's talking about his disciples and he's us who are believers. Understand this, that all of them may be one. Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us
so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them as you have loved me.
See, I'm going to invite the team to come up and we're going to sing a song to close, but when we get a glimpse of what it's like that Jesus and the Father are close beyond close, begotten of the same nature and the same, we get a glimpse of the kind of life God wants us to have with one another. We get the kind of picture of what it means for us to get serious about resolving conflict, dealing honestly with anger, telling someone you forgive them when they hurt you. Because Jesus says those who believe and those who say, I believe, will have to be so serious about this that others will see the love that they have for each other the way I love you, that they too will want to believe this. See, it's not going to be enough to just say, hey, we're learning some doctrines at our church. People ask me that all the time. Oh, is this a church that has good doctrine? I'm like, what does that mean? I'm like, we're a church that believes that we have to live doctrine. We have to live the truth of these doctrines. Because so many people are tired of Christians preaching at them what it means to believe in the truth, forgetting that in Christianity, the truth is a person. In Christianity, the truth first comes in a person that's living and is God. And his name was Jesus of Nazareth. That's what we believe. And so this morning, for some of you, you'll be like, I guess I'm not a Christian. We understand. Because to believe that God has a son is a little bit crazy. And that's why the Bible says that the person who was able to say that takes this step of faith and says, I can't understand it all. I'm not sure it really makes sense, but there's something about the promises and the life that you give us that I want, Jesus. And I want to build my life on that. For thousands of years, Christians have said, this is the way we talk about who the Son is. This is the way we talk about who the Son is, who came for our salvation. Not just to make our life better, but to remind us that the Father wants to be our Father. That we are His children. I know very little about parenting, but I know that I want the best for my children. And I make mistakes, and it's messy and broken, but God doesn't make mistakes with His children. This morning, some of you need to be reminded that God is inviting you to maybe say again, I really want to be your child. I really want to live in such a way that you're the Father. I know a lot of people that don't want their God as their Father. They want God as their coach. They want God to just open the right door. They want God for success. Jesus says, no, God is the Father. That means he calls the shots. He's not like Santa that just does for stuff for you. And when we anchor our lives on the truth of how Christians have talked about this, we say, God, you need to be the Father in my life. And I need to learn to trust your prompting and your ways for my life. I want my kids and my great-grandchildren and people who see me to know that I've anchored my life on that truth. Let's just stand. So we sing this song. My prayer is that you would really sing this song, we already sang it once, as a prayer. He became what we are so that we would become who He was. That we believe. Let's sing.